Sand Through the Hourglass, written and read by Eos Rose. Peter was a morning person. This had always been an endless source of despair for his siblings, of course, who would have gladly wasted half the day in the comfort of their beds had he but let them. "Don't you know a queen needs her beauty rest?" Susan would chide each morning with an exaggerated sigh, her frustration echoed in the gurgling snore of Edmund, asleep in his porridge. "Time is valuable," he'd laughed. "Don't waste it." Now, curled into the warmth of his beautiful Telmarine boy, he thought he might be persuaded to sleep in once in a while. I'm Not All Right, written and read by Eos Rose. I'm not all right, I'm broken inside, and all I go through, it leads me to you. Sanctus Real, I'm not all right. "It's all right," he'd said. "It's not how I thought it would be, but it's all right." Not until his feet are back on the bustling platform does he acknowledge the lie. The train is whistling its warning. All around him, giggling schoolchildren are gathering their luggage and straightening their perfectly creased and starched uniforms, ready to start another term. A strange boy is talking to Susan, but he is deaf to it all. All he can hear is the sound of love unspoken and promises unbroken. He's left his heart in Narnia, and nothing will ever be right again. Unicorn Pops, written and read by Eos Rose. When his adoring cousin had turned her angel face his way and begged him to take her to the fair, he'd melted, mentally postponing his date with Ben, who had other ideas. "Oh, but I love fairs," he grinned. "I'll tag along." And Will, though inexplicably uneasy, didn't argue. He realized his folly too late. They were minutes past the entrance when Ben purchased the unicorn pop. He tried not to watch that sinful tongue, those teasing lips. Really. But he was only a man, and when his lover deep-throated the damn thing, well, enough was enough. Annie would understand someday. Pretty Please with a Cherry on Top, written and read by Eos Rose. "All you have to do is say it," Caspian coaxed the adorably pouting king of old. How fortunate that he had thought to check on the man before retiring to his own rooms for the night. Else he might have missed the endearing sight of his idol, helplessly tangled in his ceremonial robes. Peter wasn't as amused. "Sod off." "All right, then," Caspian nodded agreeably. "Shall I summon the maids?" And let news of his humiliation spread? Peter scowled. "I really hate you, you know that." "Of course." "Would you please help me undress?" Caspian leered. "My pleasure." Poisonous Roses, written and read by Eos Rose. His lips were rose soft, in stark comparison to his merciless tongue. Always his words cut deeply, mocking, scornful, ruthless. From the first, the prince had been intimidated by the High King's legend and enraptured by his beauty. He was a rare rose, this barbarian, but his thorns were deadly. Anger dripped from his lips like venom, the cure unknown. Yet, masochistically, he could not turn away, could not help but encourage the king's lethal passion, fascinated by that deceptively pretty mouth. Until, at last, his will shattered. Peter's kiss was poison, but Caspian was too far gone to care. I want to kiss you, but your lips are venomous poison, your poison running through my veins. Labyrinthine, written and read by Eos Rose. The golden youth fled before him, fey and light as he led a merry chase along the starlit paths of the rose maze, dancing just out of reach with coy eyes and playful smiles. Faster, slower, the distance between them shortened and lengthened by turns, his prey teasing him, testing him. Laughter whispered through the silence, a balm to Caspian's wearied spirit. Finally, when they were both well and truly lost, and their breaths came in heavy puffs, Peter allowed himself to be caught, to be cornered against a thistled wall and seduced into submission. So, Caspian mused wondrously, this is love. Love in Bloom, written and read by Eos Rose. Prince, no, King Caspian, was in love with his sister. There was no sugarcoating it, no mistaking his intentions for anything but what they were. With gifts he wooed her, with clothes, with jewels, with poetry and promises. Each morning he was forced to look on as their romance budded and bloomed just a little bit more. Roses opened for them, birds sang for them, and Narnia waited with bated breath for news of their inevitable engagement. They suited each other perfectly. And yet, they were all wrong for each other. Peter wanted to scream, to shout, to tell everyone it was all a mistake, such a terrible mistake. But who would listen? Everyone knows the hero of the story always gets the fair maiden in the end. And so, if his smile was a little strained, his eyes a little bright, his words of blessing upon their future together a little curt, well, he was the overprotective big brother. He was supposed to be the stubbornly resistant one, now wasn't he? No one could ever know that it was not Caspian he resented, but Susan. Heroes and Kings, written and read by Eos Rose. There's a crown on his head and a knot in his throat. Staring into the mirror, studying his reflection, he fancies that he looks more like a child trussed up for some extravagant masquerade party than a young man preparing for his first formal appearance as a king of Narnia. Any minute now, this dream, nightmare, will end. Alberta will make her presence known and proceed to whip out her handkerchief to rub at an imagined spot of dirt on his cheek, all the while babbling nonsense he won't really hear. After all, cowardly boys like Eustace Clarence Scrub don't really become heroes. They don't face off against giants and witches, or go plunging into the depths of Hades to rescue princes from enchantments. They don't reign over magical lands from seaside palaces, either. Such things are better left to his cousins. Eustace, a familiar voice chuckles unexpectedly. Slowly, he turns to face the intruder, scowling at the amusement glimmering in the elder man's eyes. You're not frightened, are you? The boy who bravely sailed to the ends of the world? The boy who rushed headlong into danger to rescue some daft prince from his own stupidity? Afraid? Blasphemy. He knows Rillian, his beloved husband of just a few short days, is trying to cheer him up. But the knot in his throat is growing because it's all wrong. I can't do this, he chokes, turning away to hide his terrified tears. I'm not really a hero, and I don't know the first thing about ruling. Rillian's cool hands grasping his heated cheeks force him to meet his calming gaze. Gently, but sternly, he speaks. You're my hero, love. And if you rule this country half as well as you rule my heart, together we will make Narnia great. The Selfishness of Love, written and read by Eos Rose. Eustace's hand is cold and clammy against his own, his face strained and pale, and with a twinge of guilt, Rillian is again reminded that his husband is still very young. For all the adventures he has weathered, for all the wisdom he has earned, 16 is still 16, a difficult age for anyone, much less a king's consort and co-ruler in training. Perhaps it was cruel of him to have seduced the boy so ruthlessly, and to have rushed him into a marriage and position he was not yet ready for. But, selfishly, Rillian refuses to regret it. He had wanted the handsome youth from the moment he had first laid eyes on him, even through the witch's spell. And though he might have enjoyed a slow courtship, both the kingdom and Aslan had demanded urgency. In order to fully heal from her long grief, Narnia required stability only marriage could provide, and Aslan's fickleness suggested that any hesitation would remove Eustace as an option quite permanently. What choice did he have but to pounce? And now he possesses a love worthy of ballads. "Peace, I'm with you," Rillian whispers soothingly into Eustace's ear as he presses him with a firm hand into the courtyard, where the eager masses await their new king. A loud cheer rises up, and Eustace balks, knocking his crown askew in his haste to flee, but Rillian blocks his retreat with an apologetic smile. "Don't worry, I'll take care of everything." "Rillian, I love you," he assures, and straightens Eustace's crown, blessing his brow with a careful kiss. "Trust me? Always. Together." Accepting the proffered arm, Eustace leans on Rillian for the strength he will gladly provide until his love is ready to fly on his own. And they try again. A Soldier's Rhapsody, written and read by Eos Rose. These days he wears a helmet instead of a crown, but that doesn't make him any less of a king. He is still a grown man trapped in a child's body, a great lord without a throne. But this time around, after his second, and final, return from Narnia, he isn't angry, but driven. There's a calmness to him now, a certainty that wasn't there before, and even his siblings are astonished by the change. 16 he may be, barely on the cusp of manhood by ordinary standards, but there is such strength and determination reflected in the depths of those baby blues that even his mother cannot help but bend to his will, no matter her reluctance. He will have his way and accept no alternatives. Of them all, it is Edmund that understands his decision best, and his letters are always quick to assure Peter that he has everything taken care of on the home front, and that he mustn't worry about them, but about his mission. And he never expresses any doubt regarding just what Peter is searching for, in the filth-infested trenches and in the blood-soaked cities of war-torn Europe. Though Peter himself sometimes questions his own motives. Sometimes he fears all his efforts are useless. The evils he once faced as king pale in comparison to the horrors he has witnessed as an English soldier, and his dreams are no longer as sweet and hopeful as they once were. Still, he refuses to give in to despair. The other soldiers look to him, despite his age, and tears are a weakness he cannot afford. He will fight, and as he slips into a fitful sleep each night, he will cling to his lost innocence and one last undying hope, a whispered prayer. Caspian. The Price of a Crown, Written and read by Eos Rose. There were no warm words of greeting when his lover entered his study that day. No laughter, no kisses, no passion. 1 minute Caspian was poring diligently over a seemingly endless compilation of military reports, and the next he was looking up into the face of a familiar intruder, his welcoming smile faltering under the stony glare he received in return. His heart fell. "Peter, what is it?" Peter was unusually silent, eyes dark with turmoil as they studied him, searchingly, and Caspian swallowed thickly, wondering who had betrayed him. It was so soon, too soon. He had hoped for more time before. "So, it's true," Peter murmured, finally. "You're going to marry her." His voice pierced the silence like an arrow to the heart, swift and deadly, and Caspian leaned back into his chair with a ragged sigh. "Yes," he breathed sadly, wishing otherwise. Peter paled, falling back with a painful moan. Worried, Caspian hurriedly circled the desk to offer comfort, but Peter jerked away with a vicious snarl. "How could you?" "The kingdom demands an heir," came the bleak reply. "Of course," cried Peter, "but now? And with my sister? Just when were you planning on telling me? The day of the wedding?" "I didn't think." "You didn't think I deserved to know that the man I love, with whom I've spent every night for the last year, was planning to marry someone else?" Peter laughed with a heaving sob. "Do you love her?" "You are the one I love." "Maybe so." Caspian's blood chilled. "But you can only have one of us." And Peter fled. King Caspian X could only stare desperately after him, the burden of his crown weighing heavily on his heart. His eyes burned.
In Love and War, written and read by Eos Rose. It started out with little things, luminous glances that lingered just a little too long, smiles that shone just a little too bright. The brush of fingertips against bared skin. Apart, these might have been easily brushed off as nothing more than happenstance. However, together they painted a compelling picture. Caspian took a closer look. And that's when he began to really notice the strained look on Peter's face whenever Susan was near, when she leaned in close enough for Caspian to drown in her sweet scent. When she sighed secrets in his ear, her breath pleasantly warm against his neck. So, too, did he notice the coy looks the young woman would send her brother's way when her small intimacies were reciprocated, and how amused she looked when Peter defiantly tried to stake fumbling claims of his own. He noticed. Oh, yes, he noticed. Peter and Susan were at war. Over him. Once he knew the options, his choice came surprisingly easy. Softness and beauty were nice for a time, but after so many years with only dreams to love him, Caspian needed something far more tangible. Queen Susan didn't look so gentle when she found Caspian ruthlessly debauching her brother in the garden, but Peter, he was truly magnificent. With Stars in Their Eyes, written and read by Eos Rose.
"It just figures," Peter had laughed whenever he found Caspian hiding away in the North Tower, "that I would fall for an astronomy geek." To this, the newly crowned king would only blush and grin, his boyish smile lighting up the night like no star ever could. They spent many stolen nights in that tower. Sometimes there were words, but mostly there was silence, blissful and golden as they held each other close and tried not to think about the world outside. no one could ever learn of their affection for one another. A love such as theirs would receive no blessing but that of the watchful moon and her children, silver and cool against heated skin.
"You sometimes remind me of one," Caspian had once said,
eyes glittering strangely as he gazed heavenward.
"A star, I mean. No matter how close we are, it's never quite close enough. I'll never be able to possess you completely."
Peter had curled closer, wishing he could explain that he already possessed everything of him that mattered. But some things were better left unsaid. Later, much later, when he returned from his studies with Professor Kirk to learn the one he had loved, still loved, had found himself a bride, he had pushed aside his bedroom curtains and cast wet eyes to the sparkling skies. He shouldn't have been surprised. There had been stars in Caspian's eyes all along.
If Trees Could Talk, written and read by Eos Rose.
"Peter,"
Caspian gasps desperately when their lips finally part, casting unfocused eyes through the trees with a hasty prayer that no one is around to see him like this. Braced forcefully against the gnarled trunk of an old oak, breathing harshly erratic, mouth swollen from abuse, tunic rumpled and partially unbuttoned, revealing a long trail of suspiciously healing bruises, dark against honey-kissed skin. There is no doubt in his mind that he has never looked less like a king and more like some poor, befuddled, and half-ravished maiden. Peter agrees, if that damnable smirk is any indication. Swallowing thickly, Caspian presses his hands against Peter's chest and tries to regain some semblance of control. A difficult task, to be sure, with those hungry blue eyes tempting him to new levels of depravity. But he has to put his foot down somewhere. Honestly, this is insanity.
"I really don't think this is such a good idea."
Naturally, Peter is undeterred. In fact, his smirk deepens into a predatory grin as he leans dangerously forward, thwarting Caspian's fumbling attempts to push him away with practiced ease. Peter captures his wrists in a punishing grasp and pins both hands above Caspian's head with a jerk, ignoring the small cry he emits when the bark digs into sensitive flesh, drawing blood. Tauntingly, Peter swipes his tongue up the long column of Caspian's exposed neck until his breath is a heady sigh against his captive's oversensitive ear.
"Oh, Caspian," he chuckles, "where's your sense of adventure?"
"Public sex," Caspian bites out, "is hardly an adventure. It's stupidity." He wants to say more, to put an end to this nonsense before everything goes spinning out of control. But now Peter is nibbling playfully at the lobes of his ears, just so, and Peter's thigh is rubbing maddeningly against his groin. And suddenly he's finding it very difficult to piece together coherent sentences.
"Stupidity?"
Peter repeats absently, pulling back to briefly consider his options with a thoughtful frown, attention traveling down to his purpling collarbone and the gaping material bearing his chest. Heart pounding wildly, Caspian hurries to make use of this respite.
"We're going to get..."
Caspian's eyes widen with shock when Peter's mouth finds one unsuspecting nipple through that dratted opening in the fabric, and sucks. The pleasure pain charging his nerves like lightning and shooting electric waves of sensation sparking straight to his arousal.
"Caught!"
It's at this point that Caspian realizes that his hands are free and buried in tangled golden curls. But when Peter pulls back to peer worshipfully up at him from on bended knee, he knows he's already lost this argument.
"There's no one around," Peter says softly, "and the trees won't talk. Let me have you."
Slowly, stiltedly, Caspian nods. Peter really lets loose then, And soon Caspian finds himself with his trousers around his ankles. And he's still convinced that they'll be caught, and he's going to be pulling splinters out of some awkward places for weeks to come. And this is a very, very bad idea. But he doesn't even care anymore. All he can do is moan and cry and drive bleeding fingertips into the tree he's hugging as Peter opens him up, first with spit-wet fingers and a skillful tongue, and then finally, oh, Aslan, with a hardening prick. His lover has learned his body well, and shows no mercy, and no, he's not sobbing for release. Kings don't sob. "You," Peter growls possessively, "are so goddamned beautiful like this." And then Peter's teeth are sinking into the soft tissue along the base of Caspian's neck, and Caspian's coming in long white spurts against the tree, contracting uncontrollably around Peter until he can feel his lover choking back a pleased howl of his own, coating his insides with one last pulsating thrust. With a satisfied sigh, Peter withdraws, a loss Caspian feels with some regret. Then his lover's hands are on him again, helping him turn to face him, running gentle fingers across injured skin, caressing his cheeks as he leans in once more. And this time that sinful mouth is everything pure and sweet.
One Perfect Reason, written and read by Eos Rose. Darkness had settled over the Narnian camp hours ago, but this troubled the revelers not a whit. Quite the contrary, in fact. Sunset had merely signaled that it was time to light the fires and commence the festivities full force. And from that point on, there was such joy and laughter and swirls of activity that Peter was having trouble keeping up with it all. The English schoolboy in him wondered at the ease with which his companions could set aside their woes, but the king in him recognized their happiness for what it was, relief. After so many years of fear and oppression, their salvation had come at last, in the form of a spoiled young prince with a heart of gold. He would be a good king. And yet, Peter rather wished... Well, that was neither here nor there, now was it? This strangeness that had developed between them since the night their twin foolishness had nearly revived the White Witch was something best ignored. Nothing good could come of it. Numbly, Peter glanced furtively across the campfire the royals had all retired to for a moment's rest, fingers fisting tightly at the sight of Caspian and Susan's friendly smiles, their natural communication. This was the fairy tale romance everyone was dreaming of. It would be a good match, he thought, an acceptable match. Then Caspian's head turned, eyes dark and beguiling in the flickering shadows, and Peter lost all sense of reason. Lips curling in playful challenge, Caspian rose to his feet, averting his attention back to Susan only to excuse himself with a humble bow. He then pointedly made his way toward the edge of the camp, meaning clear. Peter followed soon after, although he knew the danger. Almost immediately upon entering the seclusion of the forest, Peter found himself quite firmly pinned against a tree, the gentle warmth of the sinuous body pressed against him in stark contrast to the rough bark at his back. He could feel the prince's breath against his cheek, close enough to kiss. "There must be a thousand reasons why we shouldn't do this," he insisted quietly, but made no move to escape. "Maybe so," Caspian breathed into his ear, "but I can think of one perfect reason why we should." "Oh, and what's that?" "I love you." Later, Peter would be hard-pressed to say who kissed who, but he never regretted it. The True History of King Caspian and the Furry Devil, written and read by Eos Rose. The day Caspian first opened the door to their private chambers to find his husband cuddling a handful of fluff against his chest,
He couldn't help but smile at such an endearing sight. He would realize his folly soon enough. "You've found a little friend, I see," he greeted and leaned in for a kiss, only to pull back with a pained yelp, hand flying to his neck in baffled astonishment. "That little monster bit me!" And later, he wouldn't be able to say what bothered him more, Peter's unsympathetic glare or the monster's deceptively innocent purr as she allowed herself to be soothed in his husband's arms. "She's not a monster. She's just a kitten, and you frightened her." The kitten mewled piteously, blue eyes glimmering in challenge, and Caspian gritted his teeth in frustration. So began the war between man and beast, the odds of which were unfairly stacked against the poor, unsuspecting king. When the unrepentant fuzzball shredded Caspian's favorite tunic, he was scolded for not closing the dresser drawers tight enough. When she coughed up a hairball in his shoes, he was accused of being callous in light of the beast's obvious illness. And when it came to all the dozens of times she leaped out from the shadows with a ferocious yowl, tripping him, scratching him, biting him, she was only playing. And then there was the little fact that the bugger was as territorial as heck, especially where Peter was involved. "Not only is the damned thing trying to kill me," he would complain loudly, "but she's trying to steal my husband as well." To this, Peter could only gape incredulously. "Are you jealous of a kitten?" "A kitten?" "That thing," Caspian would declare resolutely, "is a furry devil." Yet, somehow, whenever Peter retired late, he always returned to find Caspian had dozed off on the couch, a certain feline curled blissfully against his chest, lulled to sleep by a steady heartbeat and gentle fingers combing through her fur. But her sleep was not so deep that she would not hiss warningly should Peter draw too near. "And you think you have competition?" Peter would sigh wryly, carefully tossing a blanket over his lover's form. "Don't you know that it's in the nature of love to torment the ones we like best?" Aslan only knew why it was so easy to love that Telmarine brat. The True History of Love Lost, written and read by Eos Rose. He appeared as if by magic in the fourth year of their reign, sent by Aslan's will, or so the stories go. Caspian, he introduced himself as. Just Caspian. With wide eyes and an uneasy smile, he offered up his allegiance in the lion's name with all due solemnity, and High King Peter, both amused and intrigued by this mysterious stranger, embraced him in welcome. "Peace, friend," he said. "My home is your home, for so long as you desire. Narnia receives you gladly." And so began an unlikely friendship. There were those who resented Caspian's presence at court, fearing his foreign influence, his unknown motives, but these were dispelled by the youth's own charms soon enough. Of course, as old fears died, new ones were quick to take their place. As days passed into weeks and weeks into months, it soon became impossible to ignore the exorbitant amount of time the High King spent with the stranger, nor the way their curious glances gradually softened into something deeper, more dangerous. Rumor became fact when King Edmund, suffering from a bit of insomnia, descended upon the castle gardens for a relaxing walk, only to stumble upon what was unmistakably a late-night rendezvous between lovers. Between his brother and Caspian. With a sense of foreboding, Edmund silently stole away, speaking of his discovery only once, in warning to a boy he had come to know as a friend. "If you break his heart, I'll kill you."
If I break his heart, Caspian vowed lowly, you won't have to. But love is blind.
One day, just as suddenly as he had appeared, the stranger was gone, and with him Peter's heart. The High King never loved again, and when, centuries later, he was called forth from his world to save Narnia once more, this time to put a strange boy with a familiar name and a familiar face on the throne, memories of his lost love savaged his mind, and, choked by bitterness, he cursed Aslan for his callousness. 1300 years was a long time to wait.